Hey, it's Chaz and AJ in the morning.
Hey, what's going on?
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Here are some of the best parts from today's show.
Listen to it, please. Thank you.
And please subscribe, share, like, comment, all that stuff.
All of it, please.
Thank you. Day 20. And now a new search begins in Avon, Adam Lake, where the husband and the family would go water skiing.
Right.
What does that mean? Let's bring on attorney Matt Maddox, practices in New Canaan, and we're linked up to the Maddox Law Firm on WPLR.com. Search in the lake. Does that tell you anything?
It tells me that law enforcement is certainly being thorough, Chaz and AJ. It tells me that they are being careful to, you know, look anywhere that evidence might be found. On the other side of it, you know, we talked yesterday about how do I feel as a human being versus as a lawyer. It's this repetitive sense of just sobering and kind of disturbing news in this case. It doesn't smack to me of a hot lead. It looks to me like just law enforcement being very thorough.
I thought, well, maybe they got another lead, or maybe they're grasping at straws. I thought they had a really tight case until I saw the website go up asking for information, and I thought, man, you do that when you hit a wall, I think, right?
I think the website is the right thing to do for New Canaan police, but yes, I agree. When you are tracking very specific probable cause-fueled evidence, you don't go to the website at the stage that they did. I agree with you.
The girlfriend, would you say she doesn't know much? I mean, how important will she be to the case? So that, you know, they talked to her, and then I thought, oh, they're gonna locate the body. And I say body because I'm not hopeful after 20 days.
No.
They're gonna have some piece of evidence, and you know, a week later, nothing.
You know, gentlemen, We've dealt with partners, girlfriends, boyfriends, husbands, and wives in serious cases in our firm. It's a bizarre, frequently a bizarre and very, very difficult exercise for a lawyer. It's hard for me to imagine what is going on. I mean, just objectively using common sense, she's in the car with this man, and the allegations are that they're stopping 30 places in Hartford. I think we touched upon this yesterday. They're not riding along in silence.
Right.
If she's cooperating with police, is she delivering to the police exactly what the dialogue is? And if she's delivering that dialogue, if she's delivering what transpired in that vehicle, then you'd think that that would be tremendously helpful to the state building a case involving a homicide.
Would that be enough evidence if she said A, B, and C, but it's just her? So now it was clear that she went and talked to, or the state's attorney came, talked to her. She went to property, showed him some stuff. Now they need to take what she's saying and link that together, right? They need some kind of piece of physical evidence that only would have been obtained by someone who knew what happened, right?
Sure. I think that, you know, the scale of the spectrum across which this person may be speaking to police runs, I would think, anywhere from he didn't tell me a thing about what went on. All I knew is that he asked me to take a ride with him, and he was stopping in all these places. I had no idea what he was doing. Right.
Let me stop you there. So if that happened at the lawyer's office in Westport, they're not on the property. Right?
I would think so, yeah.
Right.
I think you're right about that. So that's the far end of the spectrum. Somewhere in the middle of the spectrum, or I'm sorry, the opposite end of the spectrum is this guy told me exactly what happened. There was a confrontation, and he told me step by step what happened. That's the opposite end of the spectrum, and then there is a charge of murder.
So let's go through this, right? There had to be a crime committed with her involvement to sit down with the state's attorney, right? No attorney's going to say, yeah, let's meet with these guys, even though you didn't do anything.
Right.
Right?
Well, your question is, Was there a, when you say crime involvement, crime involvement for her?
She was involved in something that was illegal to sit down with a state's attorney, right?
Like, we already know that she's charged. We already know that she's charged with significant felonies in the tampering with evidence and interfering with an investigation, right?
Yeah.
Those are significant felonies, one of which carries a 5-year mandatory sentence if she's convicted. And if they're charging her with those two felonies, then they're also contemplating a charge of conspiracy to commit murder, and or accessory to murder. So, yeah, they're interviewing her with that kind of environment in mind as they're speaking.
Right. So I guess what I'm saying is, if you're her attorney and you look at what the police have, and let's just say she's a victim of circumstance, they were just tossing drugs out too. They were delivering drugs. And I don't know how the blood got on there or whatever the story is. If you're her attorney, you don't say, well, let's bring the state in, right? And then let's go walk the property, right?
No, look, Andy Bowman is a tremendously experienced attorney and a very experienced trial lawyer. You don't even agree to a meeting with police with such a serious set of circumstances as these before you vet your client's conversation and you think you've got something really, really compelling to deliver.
Right. And then, yes, exactly. So we have something that you're going to want to know. Come on over. Let's make a deal.
Yeah, and,
right.
Right. And you're saying to your client, listen, Michelle, you have this life. You have a great deal to lose. Whatever may have happened here, let's take a 90 degree turn here or 180 and let's try to mitigate the damage that has been done to you and your life.
Now, would you, do you think the state might be putting, let's just say they talk to her and now they're not getting anywhere with what she's giving them. And now they start to feel like she might not be being truthful in the investigation and not really cooperating because lying is not cooperating. Would they start looking at taxes, shady business deals, other ways to put pressure on her to do the right thing?
That's an interesting question. That happens, in my experience, it happens much more frequently in federal prosecutions. It doesn't happen in state prosecutions and in municipal investigations. That's extremely rare. It's a much more common technique on federal prosecutions.
If the state had just enough evidence now to charge this guy with murder, would they do it or would they sit back and wait until they had a stronger case?
Knowing Rich Colangelo, I think he's okay to wait. He's a patient type of an attorney and state's attorney, and he won't jump if he thinks there is more that can be developed.
Okay.
So he's a wait-for-it kind of guy.
So they might have. So I thought that when they had the hearing this week, we were going to find out anything he knew about charging him with murder to keep him in jail. So that's not the case.
He is not an anxious guy. He is not. He's methodical and very, very thorough. And he wants to build as strong a case as can be built before producing a warrant.
Now, a normal defendant would have a cell phone and a laptop or whatever. This guy owns a company. So how do you, like, look at every single cell phone the company has, take an inventory of all these phones? Because clearly the guy's probably not stupid enough to use his own cell phone,
right,
or own
yeah.
laptop to Google how to do things, right? So how do you look through all, and are they able to get warrants on company phones, company electronics? Let's do an inventory.
Records.
We're missing a laptop here.
Yeah.
Where is that? Are they able to do that, or can they just, when they had the search warrants, they just searched his home and that his property?
I think a judge would sign a warrant for any electronic devices either in his possession or under his control, either personally or professionally. I don't think that would be much of a problem.
So the longer it takes to find a body, and again, I say a body because I'm not hopeful, but who knows, the longer it takes, the harder it will be to prove who did it and how it was done, right?
Yeah. Each day that goes by, the more time that passes, the more discouraging, I suppose, it comes forensically concerning the body, yes.
If you're the state's attorney, what are you doing now, and what are you directing or asking of investigators to do?
Well, look, I'm looking at maps. I'm looking at this man's normal routine. I'm looking at his associates, his business and personal associates, and I'm asking investigators to tap every single one of them on the shoulder, call every single one of them, show up, and ask questions of every single person who this man routinely comes in contact with, and every single person who with whom he was in contact, let's say within the prior month or longer. I'm talking to his divorce lawyers. I'm talking to divorce law firm staff. There are a lot of people that I think that the state attorney's office is going to want to contact.
So the maps that you mentioned, is there a method as to, like, okay, this is where the person, the suspect lives, this is where we believe the crime took place, and typically a suspect will dispose of a body within a certain amount of miles? Is that when you say maps, is that what you're kind of looking at? Is there a formula?
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, people are creatures of habit. We know that, right? People have their routines. A good example is the search of that dumpster at the home that I guess his company had recently constructed in New Canaan, where the neighbors were awakened by the clanging of the dumpster.
Yeah, mysterious bang,
You're going to look at where this person normally operates and examine it's gruesome, but likely locations where a body might be disposed.
If they had footage from a security camera that puts him in that neighborhood on the day of the disappearance, and if it's the timeline, would that be enough for a murder charge in itself?
Just placing him there? No.
No. Okay.
No. Yeah, you need more than that. That would be an excellent link in that chain of evidence that we've been speaking about.
Yeah. So that's another marble on the scale.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. Absolutely.
Okay. Gotcha. Anything else that you've seen that you want to add?
I continue to wonder about, and I'm sorry to bring you back to this, but Michelle Traconis, from a lawyer's perspective, it's a troubling situation when you, and Andy Bowman, again, is very, very experienced, you produce someone and you encourage them to deliver information, and for law enforcement, it is, for law enforcement and for the defense attorney, it is a very, very troublesome and counterproductive exercise, as you can imagine. When you produce someone, law enforcement interviews that person, spends time and resources on going to various locations, and little or nothing comes of it, that can be a very damaging set of circumstances for your client.
What does that tell you? Does that tell you that this might be planned, that... you know, they kind of saw all this coming, and she knows to keep her mouth shut. But if she did, she wouldn't volunteer to talk to them, right?
I would think so.
That's a logical inference. I will tell you, in our many years of practice in our firm, it is stunning the emotional barriers in relationships that prevent people from behaving and thinking objectively. I don't think it doesn't necessarily mean that there was a plan. Who knows what type of emotional burden or emotional connection or sense of commitment this person thinks she has toward him, which is impeding her ability to cooperate. It happens so frequently in our practice, and every time it is just so frustrating.
When that does happen, is it a matter of time before they start cooperating? Is it more pressure? Is it a piece of evidence that's found that makes them realize, okay, I'm going down now? What is it?
I think your first the first element is time. I think they adjust to a different life. We've had clients in federal prosecutions take a year to realize, boy, my life has changed, and this is not it's not going to be what I thought it was going to be, and it's time for me to get real.
Interesting. Interesting. Fascinating. Thank you so much for coming on. I have a feeling this is going to slow down for a little while, but as soon as something develops, we want to have you back.
Well, thanks very much, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Attorney Matt Maddox. Florida couple uses pet alligator to reveal child's gender.
It's a pet?
Right. There was a lot of things that
alligator.
There's a lot of things that struck me just in the headline. And I left something out in the headline. So I'm going to read the whole headline now.
Okay.
Florida couple uses pet alligator to reveal 10th child's gender.
10th?
10th.
At that point, why?
Who cares?
Yeah.
That explains the pet
10,
alligator, though.
Number 10 is not special. I'm sorry, but number 10 is like, another one? Okay.
That's right. Yeah. Phil makes a good point. That's why they have a pet alligator.
Right.
Let's get rid of some of these pesky kids.
Oh, gotcha. Right. Go play with the alligator.
We're not going to deal with you messing
right.
around.
Well, he sure is getting
yeah,
bigger.
Yeah, quiet down or...
Right. You get to walk Fifi.
Fifi.
These gender reveals are just...
Annoying?
Extravagant.
Extravagant. And does anyone really care?
No.
It's all one-upsmanship. It's not even about the event or the baby anymore.
Right.
It's about how viral can we go.
Exactly, right.
Right.
Right. Let's have him on the news.
Yeah.
Here's an idea. Wait till the kid comes out. Look, it's a girl. Look at the boy.
I don't understand what this is all about and where it came from.
It's an excuse to have a party.
I'm in for that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Right, but then you got to bring a gift.
But as soon as you hear your friends getting married, you're like, well, there goes my life for the next 2 years because there's the shower and the this and the that and the wedding and the destination,
right
bridal party and the gifts and the this and the suit and the that, the band and then the baby and then the party. It's like,
this is why you piss them off right at that moment.
I'm going to be honoring you and your love for you, whoever, for the next 5 years.
You're marrying so-and-so, they're a pig. Done. Done.
Oh my
then
God!
You get
Isn't
all that.
It enough to just go to the wedding and bring a gift?
No.
And then, let's do a destination wedding. Oh, good. Plane tickets in a hotel. That's what I wanted.
Nice and cheap.
Not 4 hours or 5 hours on a Saturday. Let's do a whole weekend celebrating you.
See you guys.
One of my sister's friends did a destination wedding, thinking that we'll invite 100 people and 40 will show up. All 100 people.
Oh, wow.
They're like, we're in trouble. We don't have enough food.
That's kind of fantastic.
No, I get destination weddings because they're like, all right, we have too many people to invite.
We can't really be rude and not invite them.
Right. So let's just go somewhere. We'll invite everyone, and whoever can go, can go.
Remember folks who elope? They just pick up and go. We'll get married.
Right.
And let
elope. That's a word never used.
No, not anymore.
No, it's done now.
Yeah.
When's the last time you heard someone said, we eloped?
Oh, before the baby came.
Why would you do that? So Jennifer and I want to go to town hall, have a lunch. And every time we tell someone that, well, why wouldn't you have a party?
Because you don't want one. How about because you don't want one?
Right.
I think because you're someone that would throw a really awesome party.
Oh,
he does throw great parties.
Right. And, people want to share. Jennifer and I do, but we know it's not about me. It's about this person with the alligator.
Yeah, what's with the alligator? Come on. Yeah.
Let's
give it to Wally.
Maybe that's not a bad idea.
Right. Wally Gator. There you go.
But is it bad that I'm watching this video and I'm saying, because the alligator has a balloon in its mouth, and it's a black balloon.
Right.
So you can't see what's inside.
Right.
It's a surprise.
And we all know whatever, it's not like it could be 8 different things, okay? It's either a boy or a girl.
So we really have to go through all it.
It's
just
blue or
tell
pink.
People.
It's blue or pink.
That's what social media is for. Hey, guess what? It's a boy.
Right.
Take a picture of the sonogram, circle the penis.
Right. There you go.
I love this because I've seen on, Facebook, couples popping balloons themselves, and this couple had that thought, how can we take this to the next level?
Yeah,
I got an idea.
Right. It's their 10th kid, so like they've run out of every idea. They've done the cake with the oozing thing coming out. Yeah. They've done the balloon with the powder coming out.
The tire's going to burn out. Either burns pink or blue.
My favorite are the baseball fails. They do like the fake baseball, and then when you swing a bat and hit it, like the chalk comes off of it.
Yeah, okay.
I love when they whiff and miss.
Yeah, so they was like, well, we got to use an alligator on this one.
Yeah, that's different.
So they put the balloon in the so the balloon's on the end of a stick.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing the husband / father puts the, you know, the balloon into the alligator's mouth. Now, the alligator's not chomping down on this thing.
No.
It's just like, oh.
I'm not hungry.
I have a ball in my mouth.
I don't feel like doing
and
anything.
And this goes on for a while.
Right.
And is it bad that I just wanted to see the alligator lunge at him and take off the bottom part of his leg?
There you go. See? Right.
I'm like, I'm just sick of these people. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Stop it with the gender reveal.
What does red mean?
That, but then also his wife, who's obviously pregnant because they're having a gender reveal party,
right,
is 5 feet away from this thing.
Right.
Well, that's good. We can see the baby right away.
Yeah. And this, that was the gender reveal.
Yeah.
The alligator.
Now that was cool.
You basically got a living, breathing meat grinder 5 feet away from
that
you.
Was
it's
different.
A pet,
right.
That was different.
It's just pee-pee.
No, it's a living, breathing meat grinder.
It really is. Yeah.
Right.
Right.
But what's interesting is all that alligator would have to do is lunge at her, and you're going to see the baby. It's coming right now.
That kid's going to leap.
That would be gender reveal to the next level.
Yeah. That would be the best. Then I'm on board. It's okay, that was good.
It's hard to when you're attached to an umbilical cord.
Right.
No.
So we have some audio. You can't really tell what's happening, but he's barefoot.
Oh, no. Well,
it's Florida. It's an alligator, okay?
But shouldn't you wear Crocs?
I think the alligator should be wearing Crocs.
Right.
Actually,
it kind of is.
Do you want to tell him you're wearing something called Croc?
He's got a nice alligator suit on.
With a Lacoste shirt.
Yeah. Right. You
see, it's tried to bite the balloon a couple times already and has failed, so that's why people are getting frustrated.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
He looks disappointed, like he didn't know.
Oh.
I don't know if he's pissed it took so long,
right,
or he didn't want the girl.
He walked out of frame.
Yeah.
He didn't even hug his wife.
No.
Really?
It's our 10th kid. Yeah, we got it.
Or is it that they have 9 girls?
Right. Yeah, really.
Like, oh.
Another one to pay for, damn it.
Jimmy Coplick, Live Nation Concert God on the show. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning. How's it going up there?
Morning.
Good. We're fascinated with this missing mom case.
I don't blame you. I know the mother-in-law, actually. The mother, I should say, not the mother-in-law. I know the mother, the 85-year-old mother and,
oh my God.
And her late husband.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Yeah, they belong to my country club that I belong to.
Oh, wow. And, so you have a connection to all this, so you've been following it as well.
Very carefully. Very carefully. I've been watching it. He was a friend of mine. The alleged bad guy. Yeah, but I don't get any trouble. But the father, the grandfather of the 5 kids is who I was friendly with.
Gotcha. Oh, okay.
And he's died. He died recently.
What did he do for a living?
He was an investment banker and was very, very wealthy.
Oh.
Okay. And I guess there were reports that he was loaning his son-in-law money.
He loaned his son-in-law $1.7 million, supposedly. Son-in-law still owed over $1 million. And his wife, who's still alive, sued him for the money, which, looking back, seems to have been a mistake.
Yeah, it seems like there was a lot of things going on in that marriage, right?
Animosity.
Right around 20 days ago.
Yeah, and I keep thinking this poor 85-year-old grandmother needs to take care of these 5 children, which is what's going on right
now. I thought the same thing. I thought, okay, what I saw her walking down a sidewalk and thought, wow, she looks great for 85. But I thought, well, these kids aren't going to, you know, it's a long haul.
Yes,
right?
It is.
So,
but they're very young. The kids are young.
Yeah.
I believe the judge made it a temporary custody because of her age. So I think something's going to come out of it. I can't imagine any human being, in all honesty, I'm not trying to be rude, taking care of five kids. That's an amazing job.
That's a task, yeah.
Right.
Really, but if you're 85 years old, oh, my goodness. It's probably an impossible job at 85 years old. But she could certainly afford nannies and things like that.
Right.
Hopefully that's what she'll say. Look, I'll hire nannies, I'll have help, and... Because she's, I don't see anybody else being able to take care of the kids.
Well, we just had attorney Norm Pattis on, and we have the audio posted now. He was on for 15 minutes. He's defending the estranged husband. And, of course, if you ask Norm, this guy, the father's going to get off on all these charges and probably get custody.
Well, it's his job to say that.
Right. Yeah, really. It's just a horribly sad story, and it's a mystery.
Yes,
huge and mystery. We all want the mystery to be solved. Like the human mind wants mysteries to be solved.
That's our nature. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Everybody has some sort of connection to this.
Right.
Shows you how small the world is.
Truly.
And the human tragedy of five kids losing their mother is just in itself the real tragedy of it. That's really what's the tragedy.
It'd be a horribly sad story if it was a car accident, but now it's the dad, so you lose, or we think it's, or it's alleged.
Alleged, yeah.
And then it becomes worse because they lose both parents.
Correct. Exactly right.
Mark in the oil truck is calling in with a question already. We usually wait towards the end to take questions, but he said, what happened between Jimmy and promoter John Scheer?
How does this guy know about that? That's unbelievable. We were business partners back in the 90s, and very frankly, we got offered a lot of money to sell our company. I wanted to do it. He didn't want to do it, but I happened to own the Meadows with Shelley without them, so I ended up leaving the company, and I sold the Meadows to the company, which now is Live Nation. And John never sold the company to Live Nation and cost us a lot of money. That really is where it's at. We haven't spoken in 20 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we were very close friends, too.
Hold on one second. Mark, how do you know that?
I read a lot.
He reads a lot. Gotcha. He's well read.
You do read a lot. I've never spoken about that ever.
Right.
Now do you read a lot like what? Other people's mail or what do you You're delivering oil, you open their mail. How do you find that? Where did you read that?
Look at the bushes.
I read it in the Hartford Courant in 2004, I believe.
Wow.
And I believe Jimmy gave him the interview.
Really?
And 15 years later asking questions.
Jimmy, do you remember giving an interview to the Hartford Courant about this?
Well, I've given interviews to the Hartford Courant frequently, but I'm surprised I spoke about this. I'm sure Mark's right, because
I can send you a copy of it.
It was pretty raw still, and it really bothered me because we were such close friends and partners, and we were no longer speaking. We spoke once in '99, but I sold the Meadows in early '98, so it was still pretty raw, and I probably spoke about it then. So I'm sure Mark's right on that. But it's a shame because we had a wonderful relationship.
Well, who knows? Maybe,
Not a chance.
No reunion tour? No.
No. No reunion tour.
Well, I don't feel that way, but I'm sure he feels that way.
Gotcha.
I would gladly re-up the relationship.
Right.
I
mean,
yeah, you seem like live and love and forgive and forget
kind of person.
Right?
I'm a forgive but not forget.
Right.
Oh, that's good.
All right, I'm going to write that down right now.
Oh, I like that.
If you forget, you're not treating yourself properly.
You're setting yourself up, too, for it to happen again, right?
Yes, but the forgive part is key. You have to forgive. You just can't forget.
Right, just kind
of keep it. Because you got to be prepared. It might happen again.
Right. Amy in Oxford wants to know about a Joe Walsh solo tour.
I thought there'd be a Joe Walsh solo tour because the Eagles were only playing two or three shows in Las Vegas. It's still a possibility. We've put an offer in for Mohegan Sun, and hopefully will happen later in the fall, because the Eagle shows are in September in Vegas. So we're hoping for Joe Walsh at Mohegan Sun either October or November.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, there you go, Amy. I love that guy.
Yeah. He's fun.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I know you had your backstage at Yale Bowl moment, but do you have another Joe Walsh story that you that just is very Joe Walsh?
Oh, yeah. Well, he's an Ohio boy, and I went to Ohio State. So when the James Gang were big, I promoted the James Gang a lot at Ohio State, and we certainly got blasted together. I don't really know too many stories because we were really screwed up at that point.
Right, and, I can't remember, yeah.
You know, we used to hang together and wake up the next morning and say, what just happened?
Right, someone please tell us, yeah. When you said what's happening, you meant really what's happening.
So
was
yeah, exactly. So I don't have stories because we both were so ripped that we just
don't remember
whatever happened.
Couple of theories, maybe.
Did the Eagles approach him to join the band, or did how did that work? Do you
remember?
Yeah,
they approached him. They knew he was a great guitarist.
Right.
Yeah.
So they wanted to go from that like country, you know, California sound to like more electric guitar based, and he was the obvious choice.
Yeah, because that was hot at the time. The rock, you know, the Crosby, Stills, Nash, Eagles sort of sound towards the late 70s was really leaving the world, and people getting rockier with bands like Bon Jovi and Motley Crue coming around.
Interesting.
Def Leppard coming around. So they were smart. They said, let's just rock the Eagles a little more. And it sure worked.
Yeah, they got the right guy for
it.
Yeah. We were having, we had an interview with, what's his name, John Batiste?
Mm-hmm. John Batiste, yes.
Yeah, he's the band leader for the Colbert Show. And AJ asked a brilliant question, because this guy has worked with just about everybody. And he said, so have you worked with anyone who seemed diva-like? And, you know, this guy's got to be a politician. And he said, well, not diva-like, but I will say that Don Henley was very well prepared and had everything written out for everybody when he came on. It was like he was thinking it was still the 80s. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
And I remember you had a similar story with an air conditioning unit in Don Henley, right?
Yes, at Mohegan Sun. You know, he's a perfectionist. And when you're dealing with perfectionists,
right,
it's always hard.
Yeah.
It's just always hard.
So you're all buttoned up.
That's what AJ tells me all the time.
It's always hard.
But you are a perfectionist, Chad. You get it done. So my hat's off to you. I'm the exact opposite. I'm the imperfectionist.
And, oh, okay. And, okay, so that's what Chaz tells me all the time.
Yes, thank you. I'm glad you have these conversations, both of us, like playing one against the other over here. It's like good cop, bad cop. Okay.
Yeah, let me tell you, two perfectionists cannot work together.
No.
So there was, we had an Eagles show out at Mohegan Sun, and Don Henley, if you've seen the Eagles, the drum kit is very high, because he sings lead on some songs from the drum kit, so it's a particularly high drum kit. And there was an air conditioning unit blowing on his head during the show, and they took their break, and I didn't think anything was wrong. They come back on stage, and I'm watching because I'm a giant Eagles fan, so I'm in the audience, and I see the agent is calling me on my cell phone. And I go, I don't care, I'm not answering it. Then he calls me a second time, and it was during Peaceful Easy Feeling, which is my favorite song. I said, well, I'm not interrupting this.
Yeah.
So finally, he calls a third time. I pick up, I said, everything okay? I'm here at the show, nothing seems wrong. He goes, yeah, I'm going to put you on the phone with the manager. He's in France right now. So the manager gets on the phone and starts screaming at me to turn the air conditioning off in Uncasville, Connecticut, and he's in Paris.
Right.
Huh.
I said, what's wrong with the air conditioning? It's very comfortable. He goes, it's bothering Don. It's blowing straight on his head.
Tell him to chill out.
How did Don, why would Don just
out.
Like,
yeah.
Hey, tell someone here
right.
to turn, why would he go through his people around the globe?
That's why his hair kept moving like that.
I'll right. tell you what I'll do. I'll bring him a hat. He can right. wear the hat on stage.
You're messing my hair up.
You know what some people do, like on stage, they'll say, hey, I need a little bit more monitor.
Yeah.
Like, I need a little less air conditioning.
Less AC, please.
Anyway, I don't think we have enough time to go through it all, but I'm going to remind me after the show to write this down.
Okay.
To talk about this kind of stuff.
No problem.
But we were talking last week at this time about Rat and their tube socks and their different colored condoms. And that was a request they made of you, right?
Yes, they actually put it in their writer, so it was written down.
So weird.
Yeah, someone went and shop at the last moment, different town.
I wonder, did managers do some of this crazy writer stuff just for PR?
Only Van Halen with the brown M&Ms did that.
Right.
Did you have that? Like, did that pass through your...
Absolutely, I did it. And it was a pleasure. I love M&Ms. So I took all the brown M&Ms out, and I ate every one of them.
That's good.
That's hysterical.
He did not want to waste them. You're a good man.
That would be the best. Like, if there was social media now, that would be the best picture. Like, Jimmy Koplik before a Van Halen show. Like, yep, getting the M&Ms ready for
yeah.
Van Halen tonight.
Big pile of M&Ms.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
And the company paid for the M&Ms, so I was getting free M&Ms.
Nice. Perfect.
Now, did you pick the M&Ms out, or were the M&Ms picked, then you ate the M&Ms?
No, I picked the M&Ms out. Because you couldn't put brown M&Ms into their dressing room.
Right.
So I took the brown M&Ms out myself, and I ate them.
Nice.
That is so
exactly. One for me.
Cool.
One for me. Yep.
Like, I'm getting paid to pick brown M&Ms out of Van Halen's bowl of M&Ms.
Exactly.
I mean, that's part of what you were paid for.
Right, yeah.
There's a lot of other stuff involved.
There's more stuff.
Were there other strange requests from bands? I know you talked about Guns N' Roses and the after party. Were there other things that come to mind?
I think the strangest one I've ever gotten, which I don't know if I've ever spoken about, was from the Allman Brothers Band back in the early 70s. And it was when I had them at Dillon Stadium in Hartford. So it was an outdoor summer concert. And it said in the rider, "We expect a snowstorm." Oh. And I call up and I go, "How do you expect a snowstorm? It's the middle of the summer." And they go, snow.
Get it?
Snow blower, blowing snow. Hello.
Yeah.
Shovel. You know what
exactly.
I'm saying? Right. You breathe in, breathe deep.
Yeah. No shovel. It's a spoon.
Exactly. Right.
That kind of.
Right.
Wow.
It's not a snow blower. It's a snow inhaler.
And that's why I worked with them till the day they retired, because I made sure they got what they wanted.
There you go. See, you're a good man.
I'm guessing that you assign that task to someone because you can't be tied up with officials when you have a big show coming, right?
I did not get it to them personally. I had a production manager that took care of it.
There you go.
But I enjoyed it with them.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, you got to partake.
Yeah, and so the...
Part of the job.
Exactly, right. You don't, like, stick out and be a nerd.
Yeah, the production manager. So that's part of their job. Huh?
Right.
It was back then.
They produced.
Right, so production manager would also get women, or was that from the tour would do that?
That's reproduction.
No, that was the production manager who got the women, too.
Really?
More reproduction, actually, but yeah.
Hmm. And did each band have, not every band asked for women backstage, correct?
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah, no, that was every once in a while that would happen.
Yeah.
And when they did, would they have a particular type? Like, please ask your production manager to bring these type of women backstage.
Yes, I had a couple of bands describe exactly the age and the hair color.
Wow.
Interesting. Interesting. I saw Gene Simmons at the New Haven Coliseum walk out while the opener was on. And you know those seats that we like? They're like four rows up from the floor.
Yes.
He walked over to the side and grabbed this girl, put her over his shoulders, his one shoulder,
yeah,
and carried her backstage.
Caveman style. Look at that. See that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Not a surprise.
Yeah. Well,
not a surprise.
Yeah, he was hungry.
Right.
I'll get it.
You know, it's interesting. You know, Jimmy just tells us the little bit that he can tell us.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Imagine if he just told us everything.
We got to hang with him one day.
Yeah, exactly.
Be the end of my career.
We won't say anything.
I always ask Jimmy, when's the movie? Come on, do the movie.
Like, seriously.
Can't do the movie.
Really?
Can't do it.
I can't do it because the secrets I have, and if I ever let them out publicly, I'd lose all my friends.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, you have us.
Right. And you don't need the money. Like,
no.
If you were, you know, lost everything, had no money, you always have that to rely on.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah.
Right.
Everybody's morals go to a certain extent, and it usually has resonates around money.
Or, who needs friends? I need to eat.
Or you call these people and say, I still know what you did that one time, and I need money.
Right.
They call it blackmail, but it works.
All right. Well, Jimmy, thanks so much for coming on. We will talk to you next Thursday. Paul Mercurio is on the phone. He's supposed to be in a meeting at 9 o'clock for what, Late Show?
Yeah.
And why would you be on the phone with us?
Because you asked me, and I'm going to go in a little late.
Yeah. Oh. It's a late show, so you can be late.
No.
Just say it's a late show.
Late to the late show.
But not late meeting.
Well, come on. There's a loophole here.
On time meeting's the late show.
Right.
Hold on 1 second. Hold on. What's that? I've been fired? Okay, thanks.
So you have plenty of time to talk. Good.
So now we have more time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know. We randomly asked to talk to you today at 9 to talk about the Veterans Gala tomorrow. I didn't know you were supposed to be in a meeting.
No, it's cool, man. Don't worry about it.
You sure? Like, you're not going to walk in. Are you going to be that guy?
Yeah, no, it's fine. My son doesn't need to eat. Don't worry about it.
No, they're good. He ate too much yesterday.
I hate being that person who walks in the meetings 5 minutes in, and now it's like, all right, what are we talking about?
But
it's like, now we have to relive the last 5 minutes.
No, you guys don't understand. You're actually, the meeting's happening now. You're on speakerphone. Say hi, everybody. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, really. Yeah. If you walk in with a box of donuts, no one can yell at you, by the way, just so you know.
That is not a bad idea.
Box of donuts. I was making you guys this.
That's good. Box of donuts. That's good.
Or a pizza. Whatever.
I don't want to keep you. I just wanted to talk about the Veterans Gala tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm psyched, man. It's going to be fun.
So you're going to do some crowd work? I love crowd work.
Yeah, I probably will. I can't help myself.
Yep, it just kind of happens.
That's kind of your whole Broadway show, right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Because we'd like to see a piece of that because it's, multiple nominations, right?
Yeah, we've got nominated for, most unique theater show, which is really cool.
Yeah, and think about that. New York City getting that nomination.
Unique, yes.
Yeah, it was, I know we joke around, someone said to me, what could you want to pick for a nomination? And be like, that would be it. Because I tried to do something different, not like a stand-up show in a theater. You know, sometimes people call that a one-man show, whatever. So I wanted to do something different. So I can't go on stage and not talk to people before I start doing stand-up. Some stand-ups are different, but I like to talk to people, and so I'm sure I'm going to end up talking to somebody. And
you're social.
No, you know what?
I'll bring Chris. I should bring Kristen on stage. How about that?
Oh, there you go. See,
you should definitely do that. But now she's going to hear this, and then she's going to text you directly and threaten your life.
Exactly. Right. You'll stay threatened.
Right. So I don't think she'd like that, but you could try it.
You know who would like it? My Ajita, the grandmother that I never had, Keith, who'll come up and just criticize everything I do in the middle of the show.
He has a grandmother you never had, yes.
Yeah, exactly. We should dress him up as a grandmother.
And he's loud.
And have him just come up and bitch.
Right.
No, but this is what I thought, Paul. Then we'll let you go because I don't want you to be late for your late show meeting. Is Stephen Colbert in this meeting?
No, it's sort of a different kind of production meeting. He,
gotcha. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, all right.
He's still sleeping.
He's usually, 9:05. Yeah, he's usually pretty hammered at this point in the morning.
Yeah, I would be. That was him, yeah.
Like passed out near an empty bottle of
vodka.
Exactly,
right.
Excellent. All right, so this is the first meeting of the day where you're like, all right, here are the top stories. Let's start working in that direction, but anything could happen?
There's that meeting, and then this is sort of a meeting, every once in a while, have these sort of larger production meetings to kind of just talk about bigger, going forward stuff.
Down the road.
Yeah. Future stuff.
Pieces we'll need to go out and make.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, am I getting hookers in the green room or what for this gig?
There's a green room?
Oh. Are you bringing Carol?
Oh, God. Yeah.
See? Wow. What a wet blanket you are, Chaz.
I'll go through her with that. We'll arrange that. We'll put that in.
Yeah.
She'll pick him out for you.
I'll talk to Carol, your assistant.
Have you met her staff?
She knows your type.
Your wife.
She knows what I like
assistant.
In bed. Someone who ends up being disappointed.
Exactly. Right. And there's plenty of that.
But this is what I thought of, and then I'll let you go.
Yeah.
All right. So you were on here talking about your Broadway show, and we had this whole bus trip plan. We were taking listeners and staff up, and you said, oh, yeah, AJ, come up, and I'll bring you up.
Yeah.
And AJ, the whole way up, thought, oh, I'm going to go on. And, you know, in his mind thought, oh, I'm going to kill it and I'm going to get discovered and I'm going to have my own Broadway show. Right. So none of this happened. So you go on and you bring up everyone from the staff except for AJ.
You're killing me. All right.
You kill me, too.
But what I'm saying is Friday is your opportunity to do that. And everybody in the room knows AJ, so why not? I'm just putting it out there.
That
might be a potential victim for you.
I'm totally down with that. If he is, I don't want to put him on the spot, but I would love to.
Let me answer for him. I've been his partner for 20 what years?
24 years coming up.
Does it involve AJ getting attention? Then yes.
It's like you know me.
Yeah.
I do.
All right. I got to let you go.
Yeah, you got to go.
But listen, I just want to say this, and I know you're not looking for this kind of stuff, but we said, Paul, how much to do the show? He said, nothing.
Yeah.
We said, would you like a hotel?
Whoa. I never said that. Back up, buddy.
He said, you gave me next to nothing, is what he said.
I said, I think Keith offered a hotel room. No. Do you need? No. Nothing. Like, he's like, I'm not going to take anything that's going to take away from the total that's going to go to a veteran.
That's awesome.
So we really appreciate that, brother.
You're
Thank
a good
you,
man.
Oh, absolutely, man. You guys are family. Anything you guys need. You guys have been great to me in a lot of ways. And, not just having me on the show, but the support for the one-man show. Thanks for coming in, Chaz. Of course, anything. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. And veterans, it's an important
thing. Yes, it'll be fun.
But we'll have a lot of fun. And AJ, come up. Whatever, you can powder me, whatever you want to do. All right?
That's what he was planning, huh?
Right, yeah.
No, you know what? Paul, when you go into this meeting, say, hey, I was just working on an idea. Sorry I'm late. Here's my idea. I think we do three shows in a row where we're completely pro-Trump. Right? And imagine the buzz you guys would get. First of all, like, there would be half of the country that goes bananas on you. And then half of the country will start tuning in that don't watch now.
Right.
It would be... Everyone would be talking about it.
It's true, yeah.
You know what? You'd have to put cameras on all the live audience, because in this theater, everybody's faces would be like, what the F is going on?
What is going on?
Right.
You know, it'd be funny, the production bit. Here's what you go in and pitch, because you're gonna pitch bits down the road. Say, the bit is, I walk into this meeting, and I pitch this idea, and everyone just looks like...
Like a deer in headlights.
Paul have a stroke.
Yeah, right? Like a deer in headlights, yeah.
I could hear the audience laughing over the bit.
Right.
That would really, like, you'd see 500 people in the audience just going, get me out of here.
Right, this is uncomfortable.
Tickets thrown on the ground, right. Walking out.
All right, well, when you see Steve, and tell him Chaz said it's okay if you make fun of Democrats once in a while.
All right, okay, I'll tell him.
You ain't gonna say squat.
All right, thank you, Paul.
All right, man. I'll see you guys tomorrow.
See you tomorrow. Love you, brother.
Yep.
That guy, I love him.
Yeah, it's cool.
All right, Paul Mercurio on stage tomorrow night at the Veterans Ball, or Gala. It says Gala, but it's jeans, and people are asking him up front. It's jeans. It's
just nice casual.
I'm going to wear a nice shirt with jeans. So, let's not go crazy.
I'm going to wear a thong.
We're here to laugh it up, to raise money, and to just have a good bonding experience.
Right.
So if you miss the deal, it's $25 ahead, but you're going to eat.
Yeah.
Where are you going to go tomorrow night and eat for $25 and then get a comedy show and then have that money go to help a veteran?
Exactly.
Where are you going to go?
Nowhere else.
Ain't going to happen.
Right. So we have sold more tickets than ever before at a veterans gal. We'll have more people in attendance. But there's room to roll in a couple more tables.
Yeah.
So we'd love to see you there. Sports powered by Road Ready Used Cars.
Well, Game 7 goes to the St. Louis Blues. They're in Boston. They win it 4-1, and it was all because of that rookie goaltender, Jordan Binnington, just would not let anything through. They just completely stonewalled the Bruins' offense through the first two periods. They were able to get one late goal, but at that point, it really felt like the game had already been decided. So the Blues, for the first time in their 52-year history, are Stanley Cup champions.
And head coach of the Quinnipiac Bobcats men's hockey, Rand Pecknold, on the show now. Connor Clifton, your boy, who went through your program and now playing for the Bruins, didn't get any ice time last night.
No, he was a healthy scratch. So that's part of being a rookie in the NHL. Matt Grizzly came back from injury, and they popped him back in the lineup. And John Moore had gone in for Grizzly, and then Moore had played pretty well last couple of games, so they left him in the veteran. And so unfortunate for Cliffy, but he had a great run. He played 18 playoff games, and I think he really established himself
as an NHL defenseman, and it's going to kind of launch his career for the next 4 or 5 years.
His first career goal comes in the playoffs.
Yeah, and
was pretty cool.
And he can say, it's not my fault that you guys lost.
That is a good feeling, right? Now, we win as a team, lose as a team, whatever.
But you guys screwed up.
Honestly, if your team loses, you don't want to be the guy who had the most ice time, right?
Correct, yeah. And last night's game was a great game. I thought the Bruins dominated early. And I mean, dominated right out of the gate. They were ready to go, and the Blues were flat. And the first period was interesting because St. Louis had two scoring chances the entire period, and they scored both times. So that's pretty rare, but it's one of those things that happens. And it's, you know, it's why you play the game. It's not always the. I think Boston probably was just a little bit the better team in the whole series, but St. Louis comes out on top, and you got to give them credit. They were good. The goalie was great, and Ryan O'Reilly, the Conn Smythe winner was great. It was a good series.
At what point in the game did you say, not going to happen? So I was in until it was 3-0. So when it was 2-0, I'm like, this could still go their way, or at least overtime.
Just get one sneak past them, get the arena back on our side. Like, this can happen.
Yeah.
That's all it takes, yeah.
When I looked up and saw 3-0, I'm like, yeah.
Then
4-0, I turned the TV off.
Right.
When were you out?
I mean, I watched the whole thing, but I just thought Boston was in trouble after that first period. Like, to dominate like that and be down 2-0, it's demoralizing. St. Louis, you knew they were going to be better in the second, third, which they were. They kind of took over the game. They played a lot better. They locked it in. But, you never say never, but I almost felt it like, okay, Boston is in a lot of trouble here. When you dominate like that, you should be up 2 or 3-0. You're down 2-0. That's a bad sign.
Through the first two periods, I believe the Bruins had outshot the Blues 22-9, and they were losing 2-0 going into the third. That really is tough to swallow. It's like, what more can we do?
Yes. Right.
Kill that man.
Yeah, it's just unusual to have that happen. But hey, they're NHL players, and you got to give Bennington credit. He was good in that first period. He was ready to go. That first 5 minutes, it was just a flurry.
And
the Bruins just couldn't score, and that's part of hockey. That goaltending position is so important that, you know, if your guy gets hot, you can steal a game, and he stole the first period for sure last night.
Right. So wasn't it the last game the Blues were really awesome? They won, and it was no. I'm sorry, it was the opposite.
Game five.
Six.
Okay.
Wasn't it game six? They lost. Blues lost.
Right.
In a bad way, and I said, you don't want to play a team after they really didn't do well, right? Because that's especially a good team, because they're going to come back and they're like, we're not making those mistakes again.
Right.
It's kind of what happened, right?
Yeah. And it's a little momentum and stuff. And again, I think, the Bruins were ready to roll last night. You couldn't ask for a better first period. And the Bruins literally made two mistakes that whole period. That first goal, they don't pop a stick next to that front. Like, you got to box out. You got to get access to the stick so we can't tip. And then the second goal was a huge mistake. One of Boston's best players, I won't say his name, had a bad change. Really bad change. Like, just a huge mistake. Like, you know, and he's one of the best players in the NHL, and he changed when he shouldn't have, and the guy that he was supposed to cover scored, and those things happen in playoff games.
Yeah, he left him out to dry. He was crying after the game.
Oh.
Twitter was really not kind to him.
Of course not.
After
social media, you kidding me? Really? That's impossible.
Goal, and then the tears after the game wasn't a good look for him, and they were letting him, you know, they were letting him have it a little bit.
New York's tough, but Boston's, I don't know if I want to say worse, but just as bad in
Merciless.
Terms of, it's what did you do 5 seconds ago?
Right.
Right? And it's funny, you drive into Boston and listen to sports radio, and they're so pissed off, you would think, wow, these guys haven't won anything in like 100 years. It's like, no, they're, you know, shouldn't you be happy?
Yeah, exactly right.
But,
of course not. No.
Well, have you spoken to Connor? Have you texted with Connor?
Yeah, I've been in good contact with him. I've been texting him mostly because I know he's getting, you know, inundated with requests and different things. So I want to give him the space. I'll wait. Maybe this afternoon I'll give him a call. And I'm really proud of him. He had a great season. I guess that he launching his career. It's hard for where, you know, I always said he played in the NHL, but he started, you know, like, you look at his number. I said this before. He's wearing, they give him 75 in training camp. You know, that's a football tackle, right? So they didn't think he was going to play games for them. That's why he got the bad number, and he fought his way through and figured it out. And, you know, I'm just proud of him, happy for him. And I'm sure it stings right now, but, you know, a week or two will go by and he'll realize, you know, he's played in the NHL, which is just an unbelievable accomplishment. And I think he set himself up for a nice career here.
Hey, you know, we've had some really great conversations with you, and I probably exposed myself as not like a big sports fan. But that was interesting what you just said to me. Like that high number, that indicates how the team feels about you.
Yeah.
Yeah, usually when you come into camp, they give all the, you know, all the high prospects, they get the good numbers, you know, 9 or 22, the lower numbers, and or if you're a first rounder, maybe you get to pick your number. But if you're further down the food chain, you end up with some bad numbers or whatever. And even some guys have made it and they stick with that. Now, you know, Brad Marchand, he's wearing 63.
Yeah.
So they probably gave that him in camp 1 year, and they go, oh, he's this little guy, he's not going to make the team this year. And all of a sudden, he makes the team, and he sticks with that number throughout his career. So
I love that he kept the number. He's like, oh, no.
Yeah.
This is going to be a constant reminder to not underestimate me or that I have to work a little bit harder.
All you got to do is just put a little decimal point between a 7 and a 5. Yeah. 7.5 right. for a really low number.
Yeah. For Marshawn, he'll do whatever it takes to get any edge. So he's the guy that's sort of notorious for, like, licking or kissing other players on the other team.
Oh, my God. Keith must love this guy.
He'll go right up to them. Pucks in play and just like stick his tongue in their face, and they're like, what the hell's happening? And he's like, that's all I needed. Yep. I'll take the puck.
Thank
now.
You.
Wow.
Yeah, he's one of the most hated players in the NHL by opposing players because of just he'll do whatever it takes.
It was a gross tongue.
We got a couple other things. I could talk to this guy all day.
Yeah, really.
But, Rand, when you talk to Connor, please tell him all of Connecticut was rooting for him last night, and we're so proud and disappointed, but at the same time, he should be very, very proud of all of his accomplishments.
I will. Like I said, I'll probably talk to him later this afternoon. And it's just good for Quinnipiac hockey, too, to have
get
more and more guys in the NHL. We had a bunch of guys this year. We got a bunch at the AHL knocking on the door. And we'll have four players from my team sign NHL contracts this year. So it's just the start of something. And, again, good for Cliffy and you know, we appreciate everything he did for our program.
It makes it easier for you to recruit. And when you talk to Connor, leave out the part I didn't know about the high numbers.
Okay?
All right. Thank you, Rand Pecknold, head coach, Quinnipiac Bobcats men's ice hockey team. Thank you, brother.
This was the Jazz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Jazz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut, on the mighty 99.1 PLR.